All right, yo, welcome on the show, Black Man Talk Therapy. We got a special guest. Again, it's me and Remy, Burger right here, and Remy, Black Man Talk Therapy. We got a special guest, Vincent Hill. I met this brother at the bar at the was a cigar bar we went to.
Yeah, we went to the cigar bar. We went to the cigar bar
with Mayor Isaac.
Yes, sir.
We just had good conversation. We chopped it up, and he mentioned a very special poetry book that I had to pick up and read, and it was like an inspiring reading, and I definitely appreciated what he wrote down because I could definitely relate to a lot of things that he was saying in the book. That's why I was like, yo, I got to interview you because you was really talking that talk. And we need that in our community, man. We need to express ourselves in our community, especially in poetry and in writing. Education is definitely lacking. I think to be educated in our community is kind of like looked at as second to having fun and entertainment.
Yes, sir. You know what
I mean? So I like that you put writing and poetry in the forefront. Before we get into the book, you know, I want our audience to know a little bit about yourself. So please, where are you from and how did you grow up?
I'ma buy a big house, I'ma buy a big car, big Benz. Yeah. I'ma get my mom out the crib, I'ma get my family out the crib. Like, everybody's gonna hear my name. Yeah. This morning I just woke up black. Race don't exist, but I woke up black. Sun in my face, I just woke up black. In this white man world, I just woke up black. This morning I just woke up black. Race don't exist, but I woke up black.
Yeah, what's going on, everybody? I go by the name Vincent Hill. I first and foremost had to get that out the way. I'm from Brooklyn, New York. You know, the borough of Kings, Thurrell's borough. However, way you want to put it, it is what it is. You know, everybody know who we are, but you know, so I grew up in Brooklyn. I'm from New York, city kid. You know what I'm saying? Raised off the stoop. And, you know, I'm the oldest of four. Grew up in a two-family household for most of my life. You know, my parents were young. So I think that I guess some of my wisdom comes from having young parents and having to be of some sort of, like, parental figure to my younger siblings growing up. And, you know, so, you know, there were a lot of transitions in my childhood. But, like, yeah, it all comes full circle, you know. Now, but yeah, that's the best way to put it.
And you from what part of Brooklyn?
Bed-Stuy.
Oh, Bed-Stuy, do or die.
Do or die. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir.
How was the community in Bed-Stuy? I mean, I grew up in Flatbush. I think Flatbush had kind of like one of those a high crime rate, but you know, it was very majority of it was Haitian. They even call it Little Haiti now. We just got that title. Yep. So, how was it growing up? How was the environment in Bed-Stuy?
Bed-Stuy, man, was cool, man. It was communal. It felt like a Spike Lee movie. You know, like it's just like everybody know everybody for the most part. Like, you know, it was just, like to me, Bed-Stuy, like you always niggas get their money out there. Like, you know, like kind of cool, like smooth criminal or whatever. But yeah, like you said, it was Brooklyn 80s and 90s. So, you know, you wasn't gonna not be touched by crime. You wasn't not going to be touched by, you know, all of the things that were going on in the environment. You know, I watched a documentary and it showed that when crack hit the East Coast, Bed-Stuy, the Bronx, and I think Harlem were the first three neighborhoods to get hit with it. You know, so Bed-Stuy was a big conduit in that era. And I have relatives that have battled with all of those drugs, you know, and so seeing that made me realize kind of like, you know, the reason why Bed-Stuy might have been the way it was at certain points and different things like that. And it's in the middle of Brooklyn, so it's in the middle of everything. But like I said, like for me, you know, we told hood stories or whatever, but it was communal. You know, everybody loved everybody. You know, this is back, you know, when you had to know your neighbors. Everybody played outside, fire hydrants in the summertime.
Oh, yeah. Right, outside.
You know what I mean? Like all of that. Everybody's outside. That's it. Like you was outside, period. Playing basketball up the block. Like, you know what I mean? Getting in fights with the kids around the corner, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's all that stuff.
I mean, I think that was one of my cherished memories playing outside. Because at first I was scared to go outside. That's where all the stuff was going on, and I didn't want all the commotion. And you didn't want to really be involved with it because you didn't know what the hell was going on. Everything, you were too young to understand it. Yeah. But like, you went outside and you kind of interacted with the other kids that were going through things that you were going through. It kind of made life worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So growing up in Bed-Stuy, experiencing what you experienced, and having family members that either dealt drugs or did drugs, what got you into poetry with all that negative energy around you? What got you into poetry?
I feel like what got me into poetry, I always liked writing. So like I always wrote, even as a kid. Like that was just something I would do. I like to write stories. I like sci-fi, I like, you know, stuff like that, like just things outside of the norm. Like one of my favorite writers is Dr. Seuss. No cap.
Yo, that's classic.
Like he's
I never read Dr. Seuss, man.
What?
That's never read Dr. Seuss. I don't
Your
even
childhood
know.
Is incomplete.
What? There's no more person more you than you? Like, bro, he was dropping jewels, bro. Like Dr. Seuss was like the dude different day and all of that, bro. Like if you really read them books now, you'd be like, damn, bro.
That's what I was just about to say. I feel like it doesn't hit until you read it later down the line of your life.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, you know, there was some good principles in there.
Yeah, all the way through. All this stuff had good principles, bro. Like every last book to me. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, people talk about different things behind it too. Maybe I have ghost writers, whatever. Whatever. But anyways, like I say that to say that I always like to write. I always was active with my pen. I remember like being in like third grade and like selling comic books at a yard sale. Wow. You know what I mean? Like, so I used to like created my own comic book series. Mm-hmm. And I tried to sell it, try to get it off. So, you know what I mean? Like, it was always something that was a part of my life, but it wasn't until I went away to college. Mm-hmm. And at first I went to City Tech. Like I said, I was the first person in my immediate family between my mother, father, and all of that stuff. Not my grandmother and aunt. Because my grandmother went to college. My grandmother was the first person in her family on my mother's side to go to college. So not like they didn't do it, but I was the first person in my family to go to college. So for me, I didn't understand financial aid. So I went to City Tech, right? Mm-hmm. I go to City Tech, but I didn't realize that my financial aid didn't cover the whole tuition.
Oh. You know,
I probably shouldn't tell a story because I'm
you don't want salary knocking on your door.
You know, but long story short, problems, man. I ended up going to
hopefully clear that.
Yeah, all right. So I ended up going to school upstate New York. When I did that, I went to school for journalism. You know, I was like,
oh, wow.
You know, yeah, exactly. I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do when I was a senior to school for marketing. So I was like, you know what? Let me try journalism. So I went to journalism, and I was like, damn, I really like this writing shit. Damn, I actually like this, you know, stuff. Like, me and my roommate created a fucking TV series. I learned how to write scripts. I was hosting school events. And then I started really getting into my poetry heavy. You know, like my roommate heard some of my poems from under my bed and was like, yo, boy, why you keep this under your bed? I was like, you know, because there's a whole, I had boxes full of poetry that I just been writing my whole life that I never just shared. He's like, nah, this shit need to be shared. But he the reason why I'm doing poetry, honestly, because he really took that convo. We came back to the city. We went to New Eureka one day and he signed me up to slam. And I didn't even know. I'm in there with my cousin and him drinking nutcrackers.
That's crazy.
Feel me? Like going outside to smoke real quick, come back inside.
Yeah, and the cops get it. That's it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, and then what you call it? They called my name. And then I slammed. I came in like second place. And I was, after that day, it was like,
Wait, in that moment, you just went up there and just...
Yeah, I slammed. I had poems.
Poems.
You feel me? I had poems. I actually had poems. I memorized all of that stuff. But, like, I just never shared out loud.
Oh, wow.
You know? And then, like, I came in second. But the guy who beat me, I really saw, like, the framework of what it takes to be a good spoken word artist.
Yeah. You know,
it was like, And I just kept coming back. I just got addicted after that.
Yeah.
So because it was the only positive thing I had around me.
Mm-hmm. Being like going on stage and doing spoken word, that's like very, very, very powerful, man. For you to go up, go on stage in front of everybody, because everybody at that moment is judging you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And what gave you the confidence to do that? Because I know when I started doing public speaking in middle school, I was nervous. And it took me a while to be able to public speak. Now I do it every day in front of students. You know what I mean? But, like, because the world, everybody's trying to tell you, everybody's trying to, like, have an opinion. And sometimes you're scared of what other people think. So what gave you that confidence to start expressing yourself?
Well, in that night, I just couldn't be, you know, it sounds toxic masculinity, but I ain't pussy. You know what I mean? So it was like that was my energy. I was like, damn, son. He was like, what you going through? You going to go up? You going to be pussy? I was like, I ain't pussy. Fuck that. Yeah. Nah, like, you know what I mean? So, like, I got up there. I did that. But, like, in a real way, this is crazy. Like, I grew up a Jehovah's Witness. So, right? So, like, I have been given, like, public speaking, like, you know, first of all, going door to door, like on people's door telling them, hey, I got a watchtower and a wake for you, blah, blah, blah. Like, you feel me? At 5 years old, you know, you're gonna build up a certain type of like resilience, I guess you could say. But also, like, I used to give like public talks in the congregation when I was like 6, 7. Mm. So, like, I have been doing that, you know, since then, you know. I think that probably is part of the thing that ties into my identity and my message when I'm doing me as the way that I do me, you know. I guess even in the book, you know, I had a homegirl tell me one time, she's like, thank you, Pastor Hill. And I was laughing, like, recently too. I was like, I'm laughing. I'm like, why you call me that? She was like, cuz, yo, you should be feeling like a sermon when I read it. I'm like, word? I was like, that's crazy. I actually was like a preacher child, preacher boy when I was a kid. She was like, I could tell. So I think that probably plays a part in it, you know, and I got to pay homage and, you know, pay homage to that, you know. So I think that, yeah, this is the first time I ever said that in an interview, but that played a huge factor in me being able to speak in public and speak in front of people.
Yeah.
You know,
that's cool. That's cool.
I feel like when we, being Black and going through what we go through, racism, poverty, violence, and all the extra stuff we go through on a day-to-day basis, I feel like we become like philosophers and poets because of that. You know what I mean? Because we try to figure this world out. So we got to throw some concepts and create things with words and mix it together. And that's what our ancestors used to do in Egypt. In Egypt, when poetry started, that's how they started to do it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Express themselves through poetry. How does writing help you with your mental health?
Expression, articulation of self. The more intimate I got with the, how can I answer this question? Writing helped with my mental health because I had to be honest. You know, that like
slam. That's right there, that you just said, you had to be honest.
I had to be honest. That's
real talk. When you write, you gotta be honest.
Gotta be honest. And, like, I remember slamming. And, like, you start seeing theatrics of people doing what they're doing. And, like, you start paying attention to people that's winning, people that's not winning, different things like that. And, like, you know, like, it gets, like, I'm talking, like, I'm getting my ass handed to me weekly. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, like, I didn't win tonight. I didn't win last night. I didn't win the night before that. Like, weekly getting my ass handed to me and coming back the next day to try to do it again. And, the one thing that I took away from it throughout that process was, yo, like, you got to be yourself. Because that's the only real way that, you know, you'll resonate and nobody else can be you. So, like, you can't chase the 10. You just got to chase your truth, you know? So for me, like, when I started to get, like, better, when I started to really try to, like, hone in on what am I trying to say? What am I saying? What is my story or different things like that? That's when I started to see a lot more growth and comfortability in my vulnerability.
That's heavy.
Yeah. And I remember I taught a workshop one time, and like talking about mental health, I remember I taught a workshop one time at St. Joseph College with a group of, I think they were sophomores going into their junior year, or whatever, like freshmen going into their sophomore year, something like that, transition program. And it was cool, but I remember I was like, all right, at the end of this, we gotta perform. We gotta show something. So I was like, yo, I'm not even gonna make it difficult. I want y'all to talk about a topic you care about. So everybody was like, mass incarceration, police brutality, you know, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, okay, that's cool. So I remember getting closer, like probably 2 weeks out from, you know, the time that they had to, you know, show and prove. And I'm like, all right, so do anybody have their drafts? We're meeting like every week, every day, I think, every week. I'm like, does anybody have a draft? And everybody's like, nah, I ain't got a draft yet, you know, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, hold on. And I got mad. I'm like, yo. Mm-hmm. I niggas think I'm some corny ass nigga, verbatim. I'm like, y'all niggas got me fucked up, like, cause at the time I'm working overnight and I'm coming here this at the third. I blacked out. Like, the reason why I blacked out was because, yo, I really realized that, you know, I've been blessed to live a passion and do something I'm passionate about, you know, and like I said, find my truth and express it. And I told him, I'm like, yo, like, this shit got me up. I'm upset because y'all all think y'all individuals. Everybody individual, but nobody in here actually knows. I said, pick a topic you care about. Can't nobody give me nothing. You don't even know what you care about. Y'all don't even see that. I was like, you talking about mass incarceration. How many people you know actually locked up? Exactly. Like, so you over here giving me bullshit because you think it sound good.
Right.
Oh, and I remember, like, I black because I was like, yo, from 5 to 18, all we're doing is programming y'all to follow orders.
Right.
Programming y'all to be able to regurgitate information back to us and tell us what you think we want to hear.
Right.
From 5 to 18, that's your nurturing. Wow. That's how, this is how we're being bred. Like, it's herding sheep. So that's when somebody actually comes at you authentically and speaks to you honestly and straight up, nobody know how to process that.
Right.
Nobody know how to compute that. And it's crazy, you know, because it translates in so many other avenues of life, you know. And I was telling them that. And I was like, yo, don't tell me what you think I want to hear. Tell me what's your truth. And that's when I started. That's when the class got real.
Yeah,
that's when I got a poem about, you know, absentee fathers. That's when I got a poem about police brutality. That's when I got a poem about different things that most kids wasn't talking about before I had that problem. But, you know, that's what poetry has done for my mental health.
Wow, that's crazy. And it's like most people, I don't want to say most, but a lot of people in your situation would have just accepted that and not even push them to answer differently or push them to dig deeper. So it's crazy that you said that. I want to, if it's possible, like, backtrack a little bit. Like, you mentioned growing up, you always had this sort of gravitational pull towards education. You know, writing, reading, and it's what led you to participating in the Grand Slam. It's what led you to journalism, and you reading is what led you to being able to write this book and even, like, becoming a better speaker and, you know, just articulating ideas better and even helping with your mental health issues. But I just want to talk a little bit about that gravitational pull towards education is what led you to do this, you know, you liking to read and write. And I feel like, I could be wrong, but I feel like, you know, looking at the next generation, I don't really see that gravitational pull that they had, that you had, you know, towards reading, writing, and what made them better. So if you could give, like, one suggestion, or maybe, like, what do you think, like, would be, like, the main catalyst to get them to develop that gravitational pull towards education?
I feel like probably there's a disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that it might be when we're highlighting. You know, I think that certain things don't get highlighted enough. Like, we spoke about this at the Cigar Lounge, where you say, I feel like, you know, entertainment and rapping and, you know, all of that stuff gets more recognition than, you know, actual people doing, you know, real work in the world or in the community. And I feel like, or positive dudes doing dope shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, because, like, to me, the motherfucker that is loudest is the motherfucker out here doing fuck shit. You know what I'm saying? For the most part. So, like, that is going to grab more attention. But what if positive guys were, like, guys doing dope shit in the right way? What if motherfuckers started having that same type of, like, audacity? That same type of, like, y'all ain't seeing what I'm doing? I just got a fucking degree. Like, what you did? You know what I mean? Like, what if we started to have that braggadocious energy? Because I feel like that's what we need. We need to combat the negative with the positive. Like,
the positive.
You know what I'm saying? Even if it's like, yo, all y'all women talk about negative guys, yo, blah, 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 blah. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, giving that life, because to me, right, like that's the only reason why any of it is relevant, because, you know, closed mouth don't get fed.
Right.
In the same way, the closed mouth don't get no attention. You know what I mean? A lot of times, like positive people, positive things are humble, and being humble is cool, but being humble, you know, sometimes gets overlooked.
Yeah.
So it's like, to me, like when we talk about education and different things like that, you know, it's hard to like highlight education if you're highlighting kids on scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so because it's a societal thing. It ain't even just black. You know what I'm saying? Like, as a society, these are the things that we highlight, you know, and then communal wise, when you're seeing more people like you doing X, Y, Z, it seems like that's the road for you. I'm 6 foot. I thought I was going to make it to the A.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought I was going to make it to the A till I seen a nigga like Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm.
Year older than me. And I was like, I went to high school in Maryland. So, like, I know motherfuckers that played with him. And I'm like, yeah, nah, there's phenoms out here, and I'm not one of them. You know what I mean? Like I
read that in your book that you recognize that too. That you recognize, like, yo, these individuals put more work in. They probably have like more physique. Physique is probably stronger. They probably jumping off the wall, and like sometimes you gotta reflect on yourself and be like, yo, that I'm probably not gonna make it. You know what I mean? That spot. You know what I mean? And some people don't recognize it and still go for that, even though the reality is telling them something different. They still got to go for that dream, even though the reality is saying, nah, you can't get there. Because it's just, especially if something that's physical.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But I definitely like your answer about expressing yourself, because I feel like expressing yourself is important for, like, for your mental health. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It's
a human need, first of all. I think expressing yourself is along the line of eating and drinking water. You know what I mean? If you don't express yourself and you bottle everything in, you know, it could cause some trauma in your head.
Definitely.
Because you're going to feel like you're not important enough. You know what I mean? It could lead to depression. And I started journaling too, and I started to see the difference in my mental health.
Yeah.
Just by writing stuff down every day, like stuff that I think about that I might forget the next day, I write it down, and that feels real good.
Mm.
So
let's go back.
Let's go into this book, though, because this is what I really want to go into, man.
Man.
Theory, How the Concrete Rose Rises.
Woo!
Title's heavy itself, right?
Yes, sir.
We got the 7 day, like seven is kind of like one of those numbers. It's a number of completion. It's a number of perfection. It's a number that is in the book of Genesis. It's in multiple religions. It's a very important number in multiple religions. Why did you call it the 7 day period, please? Explain
seven
that.
Seven is also a number of God, right? Like,
can't
forget that. But why did I call it a 7 day theory? I call it a 7 day theory because I wanted to challenge the idea that it takes 21 days to make a new habit. So. Mm-hmm. You know, like I wanted the book to be a proactive book, you know what I'm saying, with pros in it, but it was all about being your best self, you know. So, like, and being your best self is a daily practice, you know. So that's why, like, I did it where it's like Monday. Let's only focus on Monday. Don't focus on Tuesday. Focus on Monday. If you read it, right, we hear it on Monday. And this is like my little tidbit, my acrostic poem, and this is my tidbit right here. And I also left, like, I say interactive because I left a section in after every day for you to journal as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like an open journal that I wanted to create for somebody going through the process of just trying to be a better person or accomplish a goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for me, my goal was to finish the book. Like, so, like, ultimately, like, the reason why I wrote it and all that stuff was, like, I want to write a book. So, like, the whole...
Hold on. Say that again, bro. You wrote a goddamn book.
I wrote a book, baby. I wrote a book, man. You feel me? Like
this is, like, gold right here.
Yeah.
Information in here, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. You wrote a book, man. Like, that's deep. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some teachers that didn't write a book. I ain't write a book. And
I appreciate
that's heavy that you wrote a book.
Nah, yeah. And that was pretty much it. It was just like, yo, this is my day-to-day grind. Like, every time I looked at the screen and I ain't have nothing.
Like,
I gotta write. That's how I did it. I gotta write something every day.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? For like 4 weeks or so. Like, you know, I gotta write something every day, regardless of anything. If it's just a page, if it's just a sentence, like I gotta write a page a day. So that's how I went about it. If I write more than a page a day, cool. But I gotta write a page.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? But like to me, that's the process of progress. You know what I'm saying? It's slow motion to promotion. So it's like it's a day-to-day grind. It's Monday. Today's Thursday, tomorrow's Friday. Like, you know, like you can't be further, you can't be behind, you just gotta be in the moment. And you know, so literally it's just centered around manifesting a goal. Set your goal. I got mine. Let's get on this mission.
That's crazy. To add on to that, I think that's something that's powerful, because I think sometimes we can get into our own heads and exacerbate mental health issues, or just, you know, negative behaviors and thoughts, because we look at something so big and like we look at like a week's worth of work, and then we get in our head and like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? But then it connects back to what you said. If you break it up and you say, I'm gonna do this on Monday, I'm gonna do it on Tuesday, before you even realize, you get through it all. You know what I'm saying? And you alleviate that pressure that society is putting on yourself, that you're even putting on yourself. So I think that's dope. I think
you definitely got to take life moment to moment.
Yeah, definitely.
Like when you get into stressful situations, a lot of times you want to get rid of it immediately. But a lot of times when you try to get rid of it immediately, you exacerbate the situation.
Exactly.
So sometimes you just gotta take things slow, moment to moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As I get into the book, man, a lot of stuff you wrote in this book, man, I know you got emotional, man, because I was reading this book and I was getting emotional reading it. Because I know you had like some real serious thought processes when you wrote it. Because you wrote, the year was 2010, and I was on the run. I was on the run from a group of people called the Mind Hackers. They're special agents that enforce their thoughts onto people. Who are these special agents that you're talking about on page 10, man?
You know, it's just, I think, like, I mean, the people that establish the rules and regulations of the world, you know, and even down to the people that might not understand your goal, your mission, you trying to live your purpose, they might not understand it. So it's like you have to be so embedded and intentional in what you want to get accomplished that you can't even let them influence your frame of thinking, you know. So it's like I said, we going on a mission, right? We on this mission, we have to finish the goal, whatever that is. No matter what, there are no excuses. When you get to that space, when you really at the time of writing this book, I was working 6 days a week with a program facility, and I was doing mad different things. So I was like a fucking flag football coach one day, and I was a person running a club in a lunchroom another day, and I was a creative writer and fucking Bensonhurst the next day, right? Like, I'm going from the Bronx, Brooklyn, I'm running around Harlem. Like, I worked at Wally High, I was everywhere, right?
Jack of all trades.
Yo, for real, just chasing the bag. But I was working 6 days a week, and like I said, I gotta write a page a day. So for me, it was just genuinely like, today I'm gonna knock this out. As soon as I got home, it was work gym home or whatever it was at the time. But that's pretty much how I executed, you know, going through the phases of the book. The Mind Hackers, like overcoming my own thoughts of influence, because I feel like external noise can become very influential internally. So you have to also like kind of like shut that off as well. Like, it's like, I like you said, what's the expectations of the world? What are my expectations? You know what I mean? Like, who do I want to be? And how do I fixate myself on that and listen from within about things that feel right and things that don't feel right? How can I allow myself to be unconventional, you know, in my methods of being expressing myself? Because me being me isn't always going to be agreeable to everybody. So like it was really like kind of like just me like letting that all be out in the open, you know what I mean? Like, fuck all that shit, fuck all the noise. You know what I'm saying? We are here. Mind Hackers, you know what I'm saying? Like, tell us that we gotta be this. They tell you gotta do that. They tell you that you You know, like, but how do you give? How do you get back to yourself? How do you become yourself? So that's why I was getting that.
Man, you dropping gems. You dropping gems right now, man.
When I read the Mind Hacker, I thought back to like when I was growing up, and I was thinking about like the gangs, because you know we all had an appeal to gangs because of the brotherhood and the love that either we were missing or we wanted. You know what I mean? Or the cops or the media, you know, that told us that we ain't nothing. Or if we were poor, people discriminating against us or saying that we ain't shit. You know what I mean? Or like we ain't nothing because we ain't got nothing. Mm-hmm. That's what I got from when I read the Mind Hackers. Like those outside, like you said, those external influences coming into our mind and trying to hack it so that we could do. And most of the times, those mind hackers are negative mind hackers. Mm. I like how you put in the book, they're special agents.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which kind of like attributes to our history, especially in America, because a lot of special agents kind of ended a lot of our movements.
Most of them.
Most of the movements. And you wrote a lot of amazing things, but you wrote here, everyone we knew that did was either assassinated or locked up for trying. And in this cold world, we have to survive to stay alive. Mm-hmm. We have to survive to stay alive. Unpack that for me, bro.
I mean, I think that, I'm trying to remember what page that was on, but I think I was
page 11.
Page 11? I'm gonna try to like go off of memory real quick. For me, it was just kind of like, acknowledging that sometimes you want to do right, right? But it's like, you know, like you said, influences and external influences, you see all the people that were making positive impact get eliminated, you know? So all you left with is how do you survive?
Yeah.
You know, like, Bill still got to get paid. I know I want to kumbaya and all of that stuff, but like, people got to do what they got to do.
Right.
You know? And it's like, no knock against any side of it. It's just a reality. You know, and it's like, if you're stuck in that space, how do you remain positive?
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, how do you remain positive? You know, like,
it's hard. It's hard. Like,
how? You know, real talk. You ain't got nobody. You don't got, like, you know what I'm saying? I was taught smiling was a sign of a weakness.
Yeah.
You feel me? Like, and that's just a, like, if we all black men, we understand that. Like, you feel me? Like, it's like smiling too much. You look weak, you look soft. This and
right.
That. You know what I mean? Like, love is a weakness because people could use against it. People could use it against you, and being like human and being a human being could get you killed. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, so we have these survival tendencies of distrust of or mistrust of, you know, just self-sabotage, you know, like that just runs so deep, you know, sometimes like it becomes, you know, it is detrimental. It's cancerous, you know, like, when we talk about mind hackers and different things like that, seeds were planted. And these seeds turn into life and people start living out these, living out the seeds that were planted into us. Mm-hmm. You know, so for me, it's like, you know, like I said, how do you remain positive? How do you become more? How do you become better? How do you do better? You know, like, like it sucks that motherfuckers gotta be anomalies instead of just a person, you know? Right. Like, but it seems like you got to be an anomaly in order for me to finish this book. Like, you know, like I had to do this wild stuff. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm going to wake up and be a writer. It's like,
yeah,
like really like hone in and make it happen, you know? So that to me is really where I was getting at with that, you know, as far as talking about they were assassinated and, you know, people got to do what they got to do to survive.
Yeah. And when our black leaders got assassinated, I'm talking about Malcolm X, Dr. King, Fred Hampton, Huey, all these individuals got assassinated. That kind of messed up our community because we didn't have a leader to look up to. Because for years, up until that point, we had leaders, whether it be Frederick Douglass, Nat Turner, Harriet Tubman, Ellen Baker. Right? We had all these leaders. And then they assassinated them in the 60s and the early 70s, and the crack flooded, and then we were done. It was over. 80s and 90s, we became an instrument of our own oppression. because we just couldn't understand. We were just baffled. It was baffling what was happening to us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Our files was on the floor. So when you wrote that line, I was thinking that, like, yeah, that messed us up. And then to now, 2021, wrote on page 11, like, our thoughts were so occupied with making it to the next day that it was hard to invest our mind in the most important factor of all. That's like, powerful. I heard that. Like, when I read that, I was like, yeah, bro. Like, every day I was thinking about how I was going to make it home after school. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, yo, do I walk up that block? Nah, that block got a bunch of Crips in it. Do I walk up that block? Nah, I almost got robbed there. And I don't got my knife on me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What do I do to get home safe? So I get when you said that, that definitely like hit home for me. Why did you write that? Unpack that for me from your perspective.
Say the line again.
You wrote, our thoughts were so occupied with making it to the next day that it was hard to invest our minds in the most important factor of all.
Yeah, I mean, investing in yourself.
You feel like the self is the most important factor?
Investing in yourself, it turns into investing in your community. It turns into investing into a lot of different things. But you know, when you're so caught up in just trying to make it through the next day, like, that is investing in yourself, you know. Like, but as far as like elevating and moving on to the next or growing further, you know, I feel like sometimes that becomes like it's an uphill battle. You know, sometimes, like you said, you focus on, I'm trying to make it to tomorrow, bro. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how I'm going to eat? You feel me? Like, basketball for me died when I was about 15. You know what I'm saying? I remember at the time, first of all, I moved a lot when I was a kid. So I moved a whole lot, right? Like, a lot. And we moved to Maryland. I was trying to play basketball out there, whatever. I went to 3 different high schools. So I was in the transition from my second high school to my third high school. And I remember like just thinking about it one day. I was 15 and I was like, yo, what's the likelihood of me making it to the NBA? Because I seen kids go D1. I went to a high school with kids. The first high school I went to, kids was going D1. They was going, you know, maybe not to the A, but they were going to them that next level, the next level, like playing on TV level, you know. And I saw the work ethic, but I also saw the politics behind it, you know. I'm like, bro, this is my second high school, you know what I mean? Like, what are the chances? Like, am I really like an anomaly? Like, not to knock myself, let me be realistic. What are the chances of me actually making this in the A? You know what I mean? Like, we were getting evicted and we were getting food donated to us. So for me, it was like, that's when basketball died, because it was like, nigga, basketball ain't putting food on the team.
Right.
What you gonna do? You know what I mean? Like, you stay hungry, your mother over here is struggling.
Yeah.
And that is the domino effect for the most part. You know what I'm saying? When you going through that and you're a young boy, you're a teenager, you're a young man, you know, you start making grown man decisions. You know, you start having to be really real about your life, you know, and even beyond that, younger than that, you know? Mm-hmm. So that for me is what I meant behind that, as far as like, yo, like, you know, you just caught up in trying to survive to the next day. You ain't thinking about, you know, college. I mean, like, it's like, I want to think about college, but my lights need to stay on, you know. Shit, I'm making more money than my teachers anyways. What the fuck? Like, it always seems easier on the other side until you start thinking about the consequences, you know? So, but like I said, like, I feel like learning how to invest in yourself, investing, you know what I'm saying, like, in the betterment for you, what's best for you, to me is the key that has been detached, in a sense. Like you said, come from communities where, you know, they got blown up for being prosperous. So everything about Black America in this country has been, you know, there has, like, it never was able to prosper.
Yeah, you know, Black on the street.
All across the board, you know, because after slavery, Black communities were thriving. you know, like as individuals, individually speaking, you know. So I definitely feel like that's why, you know, like, you know, a lot of different things. And then we talked about it at the cigar lounge. I was like, then you get an image of, because no funny shit, like you think about it, like we talk about the streets and shit like that. It's like, yeah, I get it. Like, 80s was the first time teenagers was making more money than their parents because all the OGs got locked up. All the niggas from the 70s, that Nicky Barnes and all of that stuff, like they was OG, they got locked up. So now the kids is the ones pushing crack. You know, and they pulling up in BMs and, you know what I mean, gold BBS and all of that type of shit. You know what I mean? Like
AZ, Alpo.
You know what I'm saying? Like across the board, the Supreme Team, like all those old New York stories, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like you got teenagers making money. Really? It's like, yeah, what do you expect them to do? They fucking 14, 15. They don't know no better.
Right. Teenagers making money.
Money. Like you feel me? Like real money. Money enough to
win. All that pain of poverty, you making bread.
You feel me? And it's like, you know what I'm saying? I'm your mama, I'm your daddy, I'm the nigga in the alley, I'm your pushing man. Like, so feel me, like it's real, but you know, like that is a prime example of it. It's like, how you gonna knock him? He just made 10 bands in a week.
Wow. And Brad is getting money is so crazy because when you get money, your confidence goes so high
to the moon, especially as a guy.
So much, you can get so much, you dress good, you smell good. Now your cologne is not the air fragrance that your mom be putting on the walls. Air fragrance is Burberry, so you know you smell a little different.
Smell expensive. You feel me? Like that changes everything. You feel me? Like I went from bad. I was like playing basketball. I was about, you know, playing ball. I went from chili to, you know what I mean, to a bad chick. To a bad chick with a good weave. You feel me? Like, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, she, Tasia bad. She got the chinky eye, all that shit. Pull up. Like, you see me? Like, what is you talking about? Like, can't deny that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you see me? You belong with me. Our swag is built together. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, that's what it was, though. So, it's like, and like I said, they would influence you. Are you going to tell them no? Are you going to tell them they wrong? You know? Yeah. And it just materializes further beyond that. And I think that dope boy became the identity after a while. You know what I'm saying? So I definitely feel like there's been a disconnect between, you know, I feel like identities as a black man or a black person in general. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And this is why me and Remy started this podcast, because I feel like that dope boy image, that rapper persona is like influencing the kids because the parenting is not there. And I think that the streets is so low percentage success. That means like life is 60 plus years of experiencing it. You know what I mean? We ain't on this earth to just be on the corner. You know what I mean? Or we ain't on this earth to be shooting anybody or like, you know what I mean? We're on this earth to experience the planet. Right, God has given us all the amenities for us to have a great life, you know what I mean, on this planet. And to tell kids to join, you know, gangs or like do crime, it's like low percentage to join the streets, because I'm like only probably like 1% or less than 1% of street people actually make it. You know what I mean? Most people who are African American, black, they go through the educational route to be successful. You know what I mean? So so when you said that, to survive the next day, I get it, because in our minds when we're growing up, it's like, oh snap, like the future is already determined by our past, because all we know is the past memories of last week, whether it be crime, poverty, the heat is not on, and then the future is just about us figuring out how do we survive that.
Problem solving.
So our past is kind of is, and our present is always trying to fix how do we make the future better, how do we make our current situation better. But the only way we can make our future better is if we dream. And I mean, I saw a lot of times in the book you mentioned dreaming.
Yeah,
it was important for you to dream and have your dream come to fruition?
I just feel like dreaming allows you to maintain an imagination. But even in the process of writing a book, I think I even wrote it in the book, but I talked about, or maybe I didn't, but I feel like in the process of writing the book, I also learned that the only way a dream can come true is if you have a plan. Because I feel like a lot of times it's like, oh, you can do anything you set your mind to. But nobody ever, I want to say, makes the plan important. There's like one quote that says, if you don't plan, then you plan to fail or something like that. Failing to plan is planning to fail. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's probably the only quote that I could think of about planning. But like a plan, planning to make your dream come true, to me is the key. And writing the book, that's really what I started to learn. You know what I mean? Like okay, because now you take the bigger picture and make it edible chunks. You know, like, okay, how am I going to get there? What can I do today to get me there? You know, in the process of still living your life, you're still doing whatever you're doing. I still was working 6 days a week, da 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 da. But while I was doing all of that, what can I do today to make this book happen? You know, what can I do today to get me able to buy a house by next year? What can I do today to get my business started by next year? What can I do today that, you know what I mean? Like you said, because, you know, unfortunately, sometimes we do come from environments where we are kind of like problem solving our parents' mistakes, you know what I'm saying? Because of a lack of plan, right? Like a lot, like children, you got a plan to have children. You know, like if you're doing it efficiently and correctly, you got to have a plan for that. A child deserves a blueprint. If you don't have a plan, you're kind of setting your child up for failure.
Definitely.
You know, if you don't know how to set up a fucking trust account or how to invest for your child, or you know what I mean, like different things like that, like for your child, you know, by the time they 18, they coming into the world still with nothing. So now, and some, maybe they had to make decisions for themselves to, you know, accommodate for what they lack, unless they were the child that just wanted to be outside or wanted to be in the streets because it looked cool, you know. And I also think that part of it too, like I said, like motherfuckers gotta make being jiggy, being correct look jiggy. You know what I mean? Like, cause it's you know, I ain't gonna hold you. Like it hit different when you see a motherfucker that is a teacher or some shit like that, but he got a bad one by him. You know what I'm saying? Cause these things, perception is reality, right? It's like, small dudes get shorties too. Like what? Yeah. Like you know what I mean? Like. Yeah, bro, you'd be surprised. Like, women actually are attracted to you when you have an education.
Right.
You're grown. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, we're talking about youth, teenagers. They don't know no better. Like, they think that what they're doing is cool, but it's like, it's only cool right now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, but best believe, at the same time, that shorty that you chasing after or you feeling with, all that stuff, she's going to get an education. She's not going to finish school. You know what I mean? She's going to do this. And then next thing you know, dude that was a nerd in the back of the class is in the front of your class now. Like, you know what I'm saying? She on him. You feel me? Like, and you might be here or you might not. You know what I'm saying? Like, you might not be in the most prosperous predicament, you know, at the end of it all. You know what I'm saying? That's not a knock against nobody, you know, taking care of themselves, because how you do it is how you do it. You know what I mean? But like we was talking about off camera, you know, dudes in tech is making six figures fresh out the gate. You know what I mean? Like that, like you said, when you start making money, you start, your confidence go up as a man. It's like, nobody tell me nothing now, right? Like, look at me now. I smell like Burberry now. I got the car one. I got the crib I want. I got the situation I like.
It's about, I feel like it's also about accomplishment.
Yes.
Accomplishing things. Once you first accomplish something, then be like, oh snap, I could accomplish more because I felt good.
Especially for a man, we need accomplishments.
That's true.
We need accomplishments. The accomplishments make us feel manly.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? Like that's a thing.
How was you feeling when you wrote, "Sometimes I feel like won't is all I will ever do, and can't is how I execute, and never is when." How did you feel when you wrote that?
It was just me kind of playing off the idea of me getting in my own way. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times we got things that we like the way it sounds, but we don't really think it's possible for us. You know what I mean? I feel like a lot of people operate from that space in reality. You know, it's like, oh, I want a crib, but like they're just saying it, but they don't really think that they can have a crib.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, yeah, like sometimes I feel like Ken is all I ever do. Because deep down inside, that's, you know, why can't you have a crib? Why can't you own a property?
Right.
Why is that not possible? You know what I'm saying? Because you don't have people around you that it's possible. Like, well, how can it be possible for you? You know, but if you are in your own way and you constantly are succumbing to the norms of what you've known, you know, like that becomes the reality for the most part. You know, like,
I think that's the difference between our community and other communities, is that we don't see those things enough. Like, we don't see cribs and money and professionals enough. So in order for us to get to that level, I feel like we need to go into those spaces.
Yeah.
So if you want to get a trucking company, go and sit in a truck. If you want to get a Hummer, go to the lot. You know what I mean? Play with the Hummer in the car dealership. You know what I mean? Like, be around it enough so that you can see it. And then when you see it and you see how to obtain it, now you have something to work for. So I feel like we just got to, like, I think more it's about exposure. I remember, shout out to Brandon Gibson, man. He came to one of my programs in Redemption, and he spoke about scope, right? And he said when he was young, he had a small scope, because when his mom asked him what was a lot of money, he said $100.
Wow.
But then as he got older, he realized, like, yo, that answer wasn't really sufficient. Because as he got into older, he realized $100 is like, you could spend that in an hour. You know what I mean?
Literally.
So I feel like kids that grow up in our community, we just need to expand their scope. And the only way to expand their scope is just to continue to expose them to things that they probably will never be exposed to. If they stay in that neighborhood. It's like what Malcolm X said, you grow up in a poor neighborhood, you go to a poor school, you probably gonna get a poor job, which is gonna lead you right back to that poor neighborhood.
Yeah.
So saying that, do you feel like our community, the Black community that we grow up into, because there's different Black communities, there's affluent Black communities, there's middle-class Black communities, but the majority of our communities are poor in the inner cities, right? Yep. So do you feel like our poor Black communities are a liability rather than an asset?
Nah. I don't think that our poor Black community is a liability. I feel like Nas said it best, right? Ghetto is a mentality. I feel like the mentality of being poor is the liability, because you only think poor. You think poor, you be poor. You are what you think. You are what you believe. You are what you know what I'm saying, believe you deserve. So to me, that's really what it is. It's more so like the mentality of like being poor. You know, like, what are we actually glorifying? What are we making important? You know, like, what are we aspiring for? You know, and I like, at the same time, you gotta think about it, like, majority of society, especially in America, is average. You know, like, we live in an average country. A lot of people are not exceptional. So just, you know, I put that into perspective, even for my own community. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of average people. And like I said, like, the fact that you got to be a phenom in order to attain good things for yourself, that's not fair. You know what I mean? Because, like, that's what it feels like sometimes. But for me, like, that's why I say that. It's like, nah, I don't think being like the Black community is a detriment to our progress. I just think when you allowing yourself to think poor, that's why there's a nugget, what's his name, Kiyosaki or whatever, wrote The Rich Dad Poor Dad. It's a mentality. Poor is a mentality. It's what you focus on. What liabilities are you making assets?
Yeah.
You know, like, how are you either, you're either putting yourself in a hole or you're establish yourself above ground. It's one or the other. So, like, that's really what I look at. You know, more so than anything, because that's colorless.
Yeah, That's true. I feel like we're assets right here.
Absolutely.
And we downplay it. I know Maine, Isaac always tells me, like, yo, why am I not more expressive, or why am I not more up front? Why am I not in the forefront? Why am I always playing the background? I have my reasons why. I'm not, you know what I mean? I like everybody like attention, but I'm not like an attention fiend. So I like playing the background. But, you know, sometimes people like us need to play the forefront.
That's what I've been saying, right?
Need us, you know what I mean? Like, we can't play the background, because the people that play in the forefront is influencing other individuals to do negative things. So if that continues, and our community is going to continue to suffer, you know what I mean? So we definitely need to start playing the forefront. Just like Tupac, you know what I mean? He played the forefront. And Tupac was one of my heroes, man. So when you put How the Concrete Roads Rise, that kind of got me into the book more, because I wanted to know what was your perspective on Tupac when you, especially putting that in the title. I got Tupac tatted on me. You know what I mean? So he was definitely influential in my life. So what was your perspective, and why'd you put the How the Concrete Roads Rise? Why'd you put that in the title?
I think that, you know, I'm a child of hip hop. And I grew up in the 90s, you know what I'm saying? So naturally, Biggie and Tupac were the most influential rappers commercially, you know, for the most part, at some point in my life. So I think it was just more or less like a playoff of the metaphor, you know, like I don't know why I put it there, but it just sounded cool, I guess. It was like How the Concrete Roads Rises, like how do we take the concrete roads and expound on that idea that Tupac had planted. And then I doubled back, but it's crazy because I think there was like Tupac had an album or some shit like that called 7 Day Theory. So it just got real wild for me, because I was like, word? Like, I think somebody else had pointed that out. I didn't even know that. You know what I'm saying?
Machiavelli.
And
that one was a heavy album.
Bruh, I didn't even know that. You get what I'm saying?
Like, crazy.
I didn't even know that.
I was just on my type of time, just like, you know, 7 days a week, you know, whatever. But like, then I doubled back. I was like, wow, like, damn, it really looked like I was jacking Tupac heavy, and it wasn't even like, at all.
I love it.
Word. Like I said, that poem. Huh?
Especially that poem, because that poem right there was, he was characterizing the whole hood. Like, we all seeds. We all got roots, right? And the concrete is kind of like the trials and tribulations of the hood. You know what I mean? Most, and he's kind of like describing the inner cities, because when you go to the suburbs, there ain't no concrete like that. It's more dirt and soil.
It's fertile.
So it's fertile. And concrete, it's not really fertile. So not many roses rise from that. So it's talking about a tenacity and a willpower that excels most people, because most people grow up in fertile soil. We're growing up through concrete. We cracking concrete. We cracking a whole bunch of obstacles, and nobody admires that. They just look at it like, oh, that rose made it, okay. But that rose made it through concrete. Everybody made it through the soil. So that poem was so deep, because it just it is a reflection of the hood.
Yeah.
Because not everybody in the hood makes it.
That's a fact. But they make it in a different way. It's crazy. Like, I think that awareness matters in the part of How the Concrete Rose Rises, being aware, you know what I'm saying? Being cognizant of what the destination is. You gotta have a destination. That's why, like, you know, a lot of people that don't necessarily have a destination, or they're being influenced just by what's around them, you know, like that scope is tight, small, you know. So to me, like, that's really like the challenge of it, you know, it's the challenge of the growth. You know, that's why I said, like, this is about accomplishing a goal. The whole book is about accomplishing a goal. It ain't hard to read. It's a quick read. I made it that way also because I understand my generation. My generation ain't reading books no more.
That's you know, true.
We read memes. Like we read memes. Like as far the most wordiest shit that a person to read on an average basis is a meme. So you gotta be, you gotta be a crack high. I'm saying we operate off of crack highs, like in the moment, boom, 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 boom. So for me, that's why I also wanted to make it interactive. Like I created a hashtag for the book and everything, right? Where it was like, you know what I'm saying, you catch yourself doing something, you know, influential or manifestive, and you hashtag be the limit. You know what I'm saying? You being your own limit. So it was just like all of those little nuances in the book. That like when I double back, I wrote this shit in like 2016. I double back, I was like, this book was ahead of its time. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like all of those nuances is because I knew who I was talking to. I'm talking to my generation, my era. This is how we think, this is how we operate, and this is like to me how you can make the most impact with people, regular people. Like I knew I got hype because one of my childhood friends like told me, yo, boy, I read your book. I read three books in my life, and yours is one of them.
Wow.
I wrote it for him. You know what I'm saying? I wrote it for the motherfuckers that don't read.
Wow.
See, I wrote it for the motherfuckers that we was outside together. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I found out I was a poet. Like, I wrote it for them. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Because it's like, that to me is, you know, like what the message is inclined for. It's like, yo, we can do better. We could be better. Whatever, whatever. However way you want to paint that picture. You know what I'm saying? And, you know what I mean? And aspire to aspire. So that's really what it was for me. Like, that's what the book just entails. You know, like I was an outside kid. I played outside. I was a basketball player. I was outside. You feel me? I got in fights. I got in all of that shit. I like being outside. So like, you know what I mean? Like, so for me, it's like, you know what I mean? Like I understand all aspects of it, but that's what it was talking about. How does this concrete rose rise? You know, what does it take? How do you gain nutrients from your environment? Because we have all we need right here. We can grow what we're planting. You know, so it's like, who's around you that can get you that next step, that could put you in the next position, that could get you here, that could get you there? Who's the person that you, what are the conversations that you can have that are uncomfortable? I was at an orientation one time for work, and like, I didn't have my idea, some crazy shit like that. I didn't have an invitation for the orientation. And the only way they get inside and upstairs is, you feel me? Like, you're in the city. It's like, they not, security don't just let you in.
Right.
But I ended up in there, right? And the guy, the orientation was like, yo, how you get in? And I was like, yo, I'm good at getting into places I don't belong. You feel me? Like, these motherfuckers is waiting on invitations. Fuck that. You know what I mean? My life depends on this opportunity right here. You know what I mean? So like that for me is kind of like the essence that I embody. I had a conversation with another friend of mine, and I told him that. I was like, yo, honestly, stupid questions got me where I'm at. They continue to get me further because I engage in conversations I'm not supposed to. Because I want to get there. I'm not talking about it. So, you know what I'm saying? That's what the whole motivation of the book was.
And you writing this book is definitely gonna help grow other roses in the concrete, man.
Absolutely.
That's the goal. There's roses that grow, they grow halfway, but they're not as high as we are in our community. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right.
And there's roses that are higher than us that can make more influence. We just got to do our parts. So do you think that hip hop is kind of like, we see that hip hop influenced you in writing this book. Do you think that hip hop damaged our community because of the message that is being disseminated by these rappers?
I mean, I don't think so. I say I don't think so because when you understand the identity of hip hop, then you understand that it embodies originality. You know, hip hop was created by teenagers who ain't have shit, you know, back in the 80s and 70s. Like, they were poorer than poor. They were living in abandoned buildings, and Bronx was burning, and holes in their sneakers. And like kids nowadays got Jordans all the time. Like kids back then barely had TVs. You know what I'm saying? Like, so the struggle for them was way different. And so for them to create a culture that produced billionaires later on, because think about the people that LL Cool J's, Jay-Z's, the Nas's, the Dr. Dre's, like when we think about them, the people that are prospering from hip hop, like that generation of hip hoppers, to me, they really understood what hip hop was. Now, I feel like hip hop is about money and entertainment. So that's kind of like the identity of it, because kids understand that I can make a bag out of this. The kids are more, kids have more business acumen towards the music industry than just the music. You know, I don't know what their contracts are like and all of that type of stuff, so I can't really speak fully on it. But like, so to me, like, I do feel like, you know, it's detrimental to a certain degree of like the messaging, you know what I mean? But it's also because, you know, for the most part, we don't sign those contracts, we don't sign those artists.
Yeah. You know?
But like, will I ever say, I would never say that hip hop is, you know, detrimental. I feel like, because at the same time, kids are seeing opportunities in it and they're capitalizing off of it. And I think that the most important thing is to be able to disseminate between what's real and what's fake, you know, because a lot of the things that is influencing the kids is not real. This kid, this guy don't really have real jewelry on. You know, like the car he's driving, he's renting. The house he's in is bought by the label. So he is leased by the label so that he could live there in LA Hills while he's putting out his album. You know, like these type of things. But perception wise, it looks like, oh, you're living the life. But that's because you're 16.
Right.
When you really grow up and you start realizing, like, that's just normal shit that people that are decent or have their own shit can do. It don't take much to go to fucking Cancun and have a good time in an all-inclusive hotel. It don't take much. It's actually not that big of a deal. You know, it doesn't take much to live comfortably. You know, we look at all of these things, and I feel like that's one of the main components. It's like we think that, oh, I'm going to live comfortable if I make it to the NBA. You don't have to be in the NBA. You don't even have to be a millionaire to live comfortable. You feel me? I watched a friend do it off an army salary. You feel me? Like, and live comfortably. Three properties, don't got to work for nobody no more. After 7 years, seen that happen.
The army is very underrated. Very underrated place for, you know, people to go to, man. To get their life off to a good start.
Nah, facts. But, you know, to me, like, that was the reality check for me, you know. So I think that that's the most important thing, being able to disseminate between what entertainment and reality.
I do agree with you that I don't think hip hop damages our community. I do think that it do influences kids, but I think that that's more of a parenting issue than a hip hop issue. I do feel like just for those kids, I do feel like hip hop artists should put viewer discretion advised. We're not doing this. We're actually not going around shooting and drive-bying. Like, that's done. You know that if a hip-hop artist were doing it, they would be in jail. Like Bobby. What's that? What's this guy named? Lucci.
Like,
Casanova. Like, if you actually involved in these things, you're going to get caught. Like, this is 2021. You do a crime, you're going to get caught. 2022, you're gonna get caught. Like, stop thinking that you're gonna get away with crimes now, especially huge crimes. Shooting, aggravated battery robbery, you're gonna get caught. There's cameras everywhere. It's not the 80s and 90s where there was no cameras out. There's cameras everywhere. It's dumb to do crime right now because your face is everywhere now.
Literally.
Eye recognition, facial recognition, you posting stuff on the gram. FBI is watching on the gram, and you get caught up through the gram. Like, it's dumb right now doing this stuff. So I definitely agree that parenting needs to be better so that when they encounter hip-hop music, they just know that it's just people telling our story. You know what I mean?
A story.
But it's a story that we could relate to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're our modern day leaders.
Mm-hmm.
They're our modern day leaders. Because we don't have no Fred Hampton, no Huey, no Bobby Seale no more. We have hip hop artists.
Yep.
Who's really speaking for us, black men, right now?
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. Like, who's really speaking for us other than these hip hop artists? Who's really disseminating our message, what we go through, other than these hip hop artists?
Mm-hmm. And then the artists that's actually speaking things, they labeled underground, not even mainstream.
Yeah, exactly. But the crazy thing is the best artists are the conscious ones. You know what I mean? The J. Cole's, the Kendricks, the Nas, like the Jay-Z's, mm-hmm. and then you know the other tier is like entertainers and rappers and they're the ballers, and that's what the kids gravitate more to, because they're the more flashy ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So definitely it's just more about parenting. And also I feel like hip hop is kind of like a reflection of our community. Mm. Right? You're gonna have some brothers that are like conscious, like J. Cole and Kendrick. You're gonna have some people that's wilding like Pooh Shiesty, you know what I mean? So you're just gonna have that dichotomy.
Every family got all of it, right?
Yeah.
Right.
You got them cousins where it's like that nigga just he don't know right. It is what it is. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It is what it is. You could talk sense to that motherfucker all day. He ain't hearing that shit. Like, I just react to copy. That's it. I love you all the same. You know? And I definitely think that if anything, I would say hip hop has lost diversity. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is, like, you know, at one point in time you would hear Lauryn Hill and you would hear Lil' Kim on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just Lil' Kim. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not knocking Lil' Kim, but like, you know, all you're gonna hear is that City Girls and, you know, Megan Thee Stallion or whatever. You know what I mean? So there was a different level of like diversity sonically, you know, and it's also too easy for you to just like internet the bots, social media and shit. It's too easy for you to just be stuck in your own bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, like, I feel like that's a huge factor too. Like, when you like something, all your phone does is compute you like this and just floods you with advertisements and more content for what you like. Mm-hmm. So now more than ever, we're way more consumed in a smaller scope, you know, mm-hmm. rather than having a full perspective point of view. We don't really have that. We just see what we see. So mm-hmm. if you constantly watching videos of, you know, black people being killed by cops, all you gonna see is black people being killed by cops.
Right.
You know what I mean? Our computers are gonna the programming is set up for that way. Mm. You know, I really realized that when I was on YouTube one time, and I was like, you know, like you see like the videos I watch or whatever. I was on YouTube and it was like Cornel West owns racist fucking ABC TV anchor.
Oh, yeah, I saw that one too.
I was like, yeah. That's interesting. So then I was like, you know what? My inquisitive journalistic ass. let me just
check it out.
Google something else, right? I was like, I'll YouTube something else. And it was like ABC anchor, like owns like anti-white black man or some shit. And I was like,
yeah.
Oh, same thing. Two different perspectives. Both people only see what they see.
Right.
Marketing, and it's just like, that's crazy. That creates such a crazy divide.
Mm.
You know what I mean, just within the country and within our lives.
Mm.
You feel me? A chick could think that dudes is only, like you said, if you consuming rap music and shit like that, niggas ain't shit. And consuming that content, you consuming tweets like that, you consuming social media, Instagram posts like that, you consuming all of that stuff, ain't no faithful men, yada, yada, yada. And they might stumble across a faithful man and wouldn't even know how to handle that.
Facts.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like,
you're thinking what you're consuming, basically. You're thinking what you're consuming.
And vice versa. Dude only knows how to mistrust women and don't really know how to trust a woman and da-da-da-da-da. He run across a woman he could trust and don't even know how to handle that.
It's true.
Like, oh, shit. Like, I thought I wanted this and now I actually have it and I don't even know how to respect it or appreciate it the way it needs to be appreciated because all I was preparing for was an ancient chick.
Damn.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, yo, we gotta, like, we have to, like I said, with the book, internal. Mm. How are we internally being better because externally we live in a capitalist society that's only about getting paid. Mm. You know, talk about our well-being.
I definitely feel like as Black men, we focus so much on the external that we leave out the internal, and the internal is damaged because we're going through so much shit. Mm. You know what I mean? And we don't address it. And then when we get into these relationships, we kind of like pour it out in different forms. And it's unfair for the person that is in the relationship with us, but we don't know how to cope with it because we never taught. You know what I mean? A lot of times people think that we're supposed to know certain things. Like, that always confuses me. Like, how do you expect us to know certain things if we never taught those things? You know what I mean? Like, you gotta, like, we're empty vessels when we come into this world. Mm-hmm. And if the individuals around us is not putting into us because they don't have time because they're working, then we gotta figure it out ourselves. And a lot of times we see answers before we see options.
Word.
You know what I mean? Be like, oh, that's the answer. And then there's other options, and then we don't know those options.
Yeah.
But I see how you mentioned the ladies in there. So how to love a Black man if you're a woman, man? How do you love a Black man if you're a woman?
Man, I don't know. That's tough. I think
you brought it up, so
how do you love a Black man if you're a woman? I think that in general, like, how do you love a Black woman? How do you love a Black woman if you're a man? Same difference. I think that it all stems from self-love, self-gratification, self-value, actually, like, being willing to be vulnerable and be open to the work it takes to actually being with somebody. And not, like, I feel like sometimes we get lost in memes and talks about, like, oh, what's for me is for me, to the point where it's like you might negate the amount of work it might actually take to be with the person that you're supposed to be with, you know, because it's like, well, if it's too challenging, then it must not be right. You know what I mean? But like, sometimes, like, if it's a positive challenge where it's like, yo, it ain't no, I think, like, no trauma or no, you know what I'm saying? Like, nothing triggering or abuse or anything like that. It's just, you know, like, life growth and I want to say life overcome his personal traumas or challenges, you know, that come about in life-lifing, you know, life be lifing, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I feel like, to me, that's really it. It's self-love. It's you. And it's really just a you decision. You know, like, if you find somebody worth, you know, the commitment, are you brave enough to just commit? Mm-hmm. You know? And I feel like, you know, I think a lot of that, like, we have a real serious fear of commitment in our society as well. And I feel like part of that, like, there's a big draw between old school and new school. But I think part of the reason why we have such a big fear of commitment is because we see the greener grass. We always see something else.
Mm.
You know, to the point where it seems like it's hard for us to focus on what's in front of us and what's working for us right here. You know, you see your friend on vacation, you're like, my career ain't shit. You know what I mean? Like, it's that in our lives, period. And then we live in a time frame where people don't stay in jobs. We don't have no stick to it in this. So what you love is going to be like, you know, like, it's like, oh, this job position is not fulfilling me, so I feel like I need to leave. You know what I mean? And it's like, all right, I mean, I respect people knowing their worth and shit like that, but, you know, like, we don't have the same old school work ethic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, this situation it works for me. Let me work in it. You know? So I think that's another aspect of it too. You know, it's just the fucking the constant exposure to everything. And women got exposure to everything. They got exposure to niggas with blue checks and niggas down the block.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know what I mean? Like, they have a very vast net. You know, so for them to actually, like, sit down and, you know, like I said, get comfortable with the commitment of being with a person and you know, acknowledging the self-work that they probably like overlooked and thought they were doing. You know, that was one of the questions I started asking women just in general. It's just women in general, black, white, whatever. Like, yo, like, you know, I hear a lot about your growth and your you know, how you have been healing, and that's cool. But I was like, yo, like, it, like, what would you do if you actually ran across somebody that was husband material and worthy of the love that you have been, you know, willing to give, right? You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, yo, you tell me your trauma, I'm like, god damn, that's a traumatic story. Like, how are you actually going to be ready to love again?
Right.
At a point where you loved somebody and thought, you know, I was going to be with them and I was engaged to this guy, but I realized he was narcissistic and now yada yada yada, whatever the fuck. And now it's like, you know, but what happens if you run across somebody that isn't none of that? You know, like, are you, would you be, how would you operate? And like, you know, a lot of things be like, yo, this is giving me fucking anxiety.
Anxiety, exactly.
I mean, like, even with us here, it's like, yo, you feel me? Like, if you was to really run across a chick that was worthy of being your woman, your friend, like, are you going to be able to take that leap again?
Right.
That time that you took the leap, it might not have been the right person, and that shit ruined you, right? Like, yeah. Real talk, it ruined you, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you sit there and you like, I could never, like, would you have the gall to be that vulnerable and take that leap again? You know, but it really stems back to self-worth, self-healing, the work of self and loving yourself, like really loving yourself.
Definitely.
You know? How can you want to be in a relationship if you can't sit in a room by yourself without being on your phone for an hour? Can't sit in a room by yourself for an hour without being on your phone, but you want to be in a relationship with somebody else. The first relationship is the one with yourself.
That's
what I'm saying. So
this dude throwing his book out here, man.
Gems, man.
Okay.
Yeah, man.
I think for both sides, though, male and female, I think that we look for perfection too much, man. You got to understand that every human is going to have some deficiencies in them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point of marriage. The marriage is to fill in those deficiencies. You know what I mean? And I think that we have to wrestle in our community, especially, is do we want the material things or do we want to be treated right?
Right.
We got to pick one. Do we want the physical things that we could see? Or do we want to be treated right? Do we want to feel safe in our relationship? Because I know, and if I ever get, when I get married, hopefully I get married. Hopefully God blesses me to get me married. I know Remy's trying to get me married. I want to get married. I want to have kids. But I also want to feel safe in my relationship, man. I don't want to feel like there's nothing in my mind that will impede me to love this person. You know what I mean? Because, of course, nobody wants to die alone. You know what I mean?
That's
so powerful. Remy, what you think, man? How to love a black man, bro?
Dang, I think he hit the hammer on the nail, man. Just self-love. You can't self-love, self-worth, self-value. You can't love somebody else if you don't know how to love yourself. And I think that's what a lot of us try to do. And then in the middle of doing that, we stumble across this epiphany or this realization. Like, dang, I still got a lot of work to do on myself. I still got to see myself in this way. I got to do this for myself. How can I do this for somebody else if I haven't done it for myself yet? And then it's good that you have that realization, but then you're so connected to the person. When you have that realization, you got to separate you damaging this person significantly. And some people, you know, that damages them for the worse. And some people damages for them the better. But in the cases where it does damage them for the worse, we create this cycle now of hurt people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I just feel like just connecting back to what Vincent said, before we even get involved with somebody else, we got to know ourselves first, because we could potentially, if we don't know ourselves, we could potentially cause trauma and detriment to somebody else just because we want that person and we're not ready to have them. So.
Yeah,
that's my take on it.
Yeah, man, I feel like growing up, for me, I have commitment issues because I feel like I never seen a successful relationship.
That's facts.
You know what I mean? I never seen it, you know what I mean, from my mother to the neighbors. Yeah. You know what I mean? I would see a relationship that was budding and it would look good, and then it ended, it fell apart. You know what I mean? Like, that's how a lot of the relationships that I saw. So it's kind of like a negative connotation in my mind. Kind of like, yo, does this really last forever? Mm. And I have to stop thinking it that way, and I got to think about it from moment to moment, because that's what life is. You know what I mean? Moment to moment. And that person, is very important. I remember I was telling Remy the other day, like, yo, like, it's a blessing for you, because you got somebody by your side that's going to push you and also help you.
Yeah.
You go through this crazy world. And where a lot of crazy things happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, 7-Day Theory, man. It's on Amazon. Vincent Hill, 7-Day Theory, How to Conquer Rules Rise. Powerful book. I read it. I couldn't stop. I picked it up and I couldn't stop. You know what I mean? And this is the first book I read all year. Usually I read articles.
Yeah.
This is the first book I read from top to bottom all year. I'm a teacher. I know that sounds crazy, but I only usually read historical articles and scholarly reviewed work. So I'm not really into the books right now. I'm more into those. So for me to sit down and read this book, it was very enlightenment and very reflective for me, because now I had to look at my past and see, like, yo, damn, what did I go through? Does this resonate? And a lot of the stuff that you wrote down definitely resonate. Before we close out, man, what was your ultimate goal when you wrote this book? Let the readers know, the listeners know, and the readers know.
The ultimate goal when I wrote the book was just to write the book. And in turn, fixate the mind on what it takes to get a goal accomplished. You know what I'm saying? How can I actualize myself into reality? How can I actualize the idea of me in the real world? What does that take? How does that play out daily? So for me, like, it was kind of like that. Like, I just wanted to be able to do that and like allow people to like try to hear their individualistic self. You know, like, you as an individual, what do you want? Not what do they say you want. By 30, you want to be this, you want to be married by this, you want to have this amount of, like, what do you want? How are you manifesting that into the world all the way through and through? Because if you have any lapses that external influences could creep in, it will, and it will cause confusion. It'll malfunction the mainframe. Real talk. You know, you're thinking that you're trying to be something that you think you are, and you're not even that. You're just programmed to be that. Yeah. So it's like trying to break the programming by being true to ourselves. So, yeah.
Damn, that's powerful, man.
All right, man. We're going to leave it at that, man.
Right?
Yo, I appreciate you, Vincent, for coming on to the show, man. Hopefully people can watch this and gain a lot from this. And go get this book on Amazon. Go get this book, 7-Day Theory, How the Concrete Rose Rise.
Let's go.
Complexity. It shows the complexity of the Black man's mind. And it shows what we go through on a daily basis, our thoughts, our demons, everything. Thank you, Vincent, for coming up and sharing, man. Any last thoughts before we close out?
Nah, man, I just learned a lot. Yo, just talking to you within this hour, man, I could just tell, dang, you've been through a lot. And it's definitely shaped and molded you. And it's just crazy that I think the most important part is that you've actually just been mindful and conscious of the things that you've experienced in this life. And you're able to produce something to help others become just as conscious or even more aware. So I think that's powerful, man. I just appreciate you for sharing that with us, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Yo, it's kind of crazy to like talk about this, because like I said, this book is probably like 6 years old. I'm working on my next book now, but it's like to see, you know, like, people still gravitate towards it. One of my friends posted a page from it. It's like, wow, the energy behind it is like still very much so alive and relevant. You know, for me, like I said, I genuinely just wrote it because I wanted to finish it. You know, I wasn't even, you know, like, I didn't even think that it was going to be influential.
Yeah.
You feel me? That goes back to being that humble shit again, right? I wasn't trying to write it to be seen, known, or nothing like that. I just was doing it for self. So, you know what I mean? Like, that's why I'm just happy to be here. I'm like, wow, like, this book is 6 years old. This is crazy. Like, I ain't have hair. I had short hair. I'm a different type of grown man. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy, you know? So, I'm definitely, like, appreciative just being here, having this conversation. And I appreciate what y'all are doing, how y'all talking about, you know, the Black man experience, and I champion that. And like I said, I feel like we need to champion us doing shit like this and make it jiggy. So that's what I'm all about. You feel me? And Remy, hopefully you get a copy. You know?
Yeah, I'm trying to get a copy.
I had a copy before, man. Kid took it. I got a copy.
Hopefully it changed their life for the better, man.
Hopefully, listen. The kid could take it. Hopefully, the kid reads it. And the kid gets the knowledge from it, man. That's what I thought when the book got taken. But I love it though. You know what I mean? I love also how you brought Tupac into it, man. Because there's actually a cult following of Tupac. I'm part of that cult. Infant kids, I'm part of that cult, man. We ride and die with Tupac, man. So
I see that.
I love that you put Tupac in the cover, because that's like a god to some individuals, man.
It's real. You're not lying. Like you said, I'll be the spark that influences whatever, right? Like I definitely
spark
took
that the spark that influences the brain that changes the world, man.
Yeah, like that's child that he was, you know, referencing when he said that, right? Us, our generation, our era of children. So me taking that metaphor and like paying it forward, you know, is essentially what this whole thing is about. Sankofa, you feel me? You take that, you move forward, but you leave something behind. You know, that's what this is really hitting for, you know? So yeah, absolutely. Like Tupac, like everything he talked about is influential. You know what I mean? Like, we ain't gonna get into that debate though, because you feel me?
Yo, 7-Day Theory, How the Concrete Rose Rise, go cop it. It's on Amazon. Go get it, man. Appreciate y'all. Have a great day. Y'all blessed. Love.